Hi everyone, I think we're going to go ahead and get started with our next week on the Data Training for Advocacy course. This week we've got special guests to talk about round two of community-led monitoring. So last week we covered, you know, the data collection tools, the ways we go around about designing tools and questions, how to do the surveys, how to select people to be part of the surveys, and make sure we're collecting unbiased data and think about the data analysis piece of it. Today we're doing the other piece, the other side of community-led monitoring, which is really focused on how we move from having collected data to actual action and improving outcomes. Because as we all know about community-led monitoring, it's really not just about collecting data and informing on data. It's really about taking action to improve outcomes. So today we've got a couple of additional speakers. In the interest of time, I'm gonna let them introduce themselves, but both from South Africa with the Rachidze Project that people are probably already familiar with, as well as Kenneth from HEPS in Uganda, who's been part of the course as well. So with all of that, I'm gonna turn it over to Lottie to get started.
Thanks, Comrade Brian. Hi everyone, hi comrades. So I'm Lottie, I work with HealthGap. And we're working on the Rachidze Community Monitoring Project in South Africa. So if you go to the next slide. So basically, the aim of Rachidze is to, we're just trying to improve the quality of HIV and TB services for people living with HIV and TB across South Africa. That's where it was kind of born out of. And the name Rachidze means saving our lives in Tshivenda. I realize I can't see the slides because the faces are in the way. And so we're basically trying to highlight the challenges of HIV and TB services, where they actually are, like in the clinics. What are the problems facing people living with HIV in the local clinics? And try and hold the Department of Health and people like PEPFAR actually accountable to fix them rather than get away with not fixing them, which is often the case. Next slide. So the Rachidze Project is made up of these partners. So the organizations at the top, these are five people living with HIV organizations working with members across South Africa. So there's members on the ground throughout the country. So Positive Action Campaign, NAPWA, the National Association of People Living with HIV and AIDS, Positive Women's Network, SANARELA, the Network of Religious Leaders in South Africa, and the Treatment Action Campaign. And HealthCap, AMFAR, and the O'Neill Institute, Georgetown University O'Neill Institute, are all technical partners who have been helping to set up, establish, and maintain the Rachidze system. Next slide, please. So we're basically saying that we're trying to give communities the ability to monitor what services are being provided and then raise any problems in order to improve the performance of PEPFAR and the government to ensure we meet the 1990 target. Next slide. So this is basically the Rachidze monitoring cycle sections. So the first thing we do, which is what you were talking about last week, is gathering the evidence. So that is us going to the facility, using our surveys to collect the data, or going into the community to speak to people who might not be engaging in facilities in order to collect the data. Then we move into the data analysis phase where we analyze what we found out. Again, what you've already been discussing. What we're going to be talking about today is the next steps of the cycle. So once we've analyze the data, the next step is for us to generate solutions, because we don't want to turn up at the facility and be like, hey, here are all the problems, off you go, fix them. We want to be able to be like, here's all the problems and here's what we suggest you do to fix them, so that we can hold the people to account. So we generate solutions, And then we go back to engage with the officials at the clinic or at the different levels, district, provincial, or even national level, to try and get the right people to fix the problems that they're able to fix. And when they don't do anything about it, the next step would be for us to do to advocate for change, to do advocacy, to try and raise the stakes, to put more pressure on them to try and fix the problem. Next slide, please. Okay, so we've collected our data. We know what all of our problems are. So what is next? We generate solutions. Next slide. So there's different ways that we come up with our solutions in Richardson. There's three different ways we can come up with solutions. The first is to come up with solutions in the monitoring team. So the people who are doing the monitoring. The second is to go to the community to generate community-led solutions to problems. And the third is to look beyond the immediate clinic if they're not things that can be fixed at the clinic. So we'll go into detail on each of those three now. So when we're thinking about when moving from problems to solutions, here are some of the questions that we give to the comrades to try and guide the thinking. So what is the most important thing that could be taken, most important actions that can be taken to improve this facility according to the patients and the staff? What could be fixed in the short term, the medium term, and the long term? Maybe cleanliness of the facility could be a short-term solution, but fixing the entire infrastructure because it's too small and getting a bigger structure might be a much longer-term solution to deliver. What is the role of the community in helping to resolve these issues? And who's the key individuals best to address them? Can the facility manager fix this problem? Can this problem be fixed at a district level? Or could only the National Department of Health fix it? Or perhaps only PEPFAR could fix it because they need to call an implementing partner into order or something. So these are some of the guiding questions we ask comrades to think about first of all. Then on the next slide, then we get into the monitoring team identified solutions. So that's like the first place that people start really in coming up with their solutions. So in Richardse, the people who are the doing the actual monitoring on the ground are called community monitors. And they work hand in hand with members, leaders in those local communities from the PLHIV sector organizations. So perhaps there is a TAC branch working in that area or a NAPWA branch working in that area. So the community monitor, who's already coming from these organizations, should be working hand in hand with the other organizations already working in the area. So they're supposed to meet together to try to come up with solutions to the key problems that they found in the data analysis section. And this is kind of an easier process where it's kind of clear what the problem is and how it can be fixed in the clinic. Next slide. So here's a list of ways we suggest that people can try and just come up with solutions. So maybe you could, whilst you're talking to patients getting surveys, you could also ask them what they think the solution could be to the problem. Or they could go and talk to a community leader one-on-one and see about what the problems are and how they potentially could fix the problem. Or when you're speaking to the facility manager, for example, and they also raise their own problems, you could ask them, oh, how do you think that could be fixed, and see if they have a solution to the problem. Sometimes you get solutions pointed to you from the data capturer or the person working with adherence clubs, which is one of our differentiated service delivery models. So those are all important things to capture down. Another way is we try and like, you should crowdsource, right? We have currently 45 community monitors and we will be having more. So maybe they've also seen the similar problems in other clinics and they fixed them using a certain solution. So we should crowdsource out some of the problems if we don't know the answers and see if they've got good ideas about how to address the problem. We can also use the national team members who have been brought in specifically to do this project. And the other option is to see if any of the implementing partners potentially have any ideas or insights into how to fix the challenges. So that would be the kind of talking to people a bit, but coming up with your own solutions to the problem. Then on the next slide. So the next kind of way is to come up with community identified solutions. So maybe we would hope, maybe we are seeing challenges for women in the clinic, or for men have sex with men and not getting the services they require at the clinic, or the adherence clubs are like not functioning at all at the clinic. Or maybe it's just generally like there's loads of problems at the clinic generally, where we just want the general community to get involved. So we would go out, into the community, maybe we'd do a door to door to try and find people of those communities that the community dialogue would be about, in order to bring them together and be like, okay, we've heard from you that these are the problems. Now, what do you think could be some of the solutions to these problems? And that's kind of a good way of coming up with solutions when maybe they're not obvious, or you've already asked the facility to do an obvious solution and then that hasn't worked, and you might want to find a new way of coming up with a solution. Next slide. So basically, yeah, the community dialogues, it's like a large meeting of community members, which maybe now we can't do in COVID-19, but again, at some point we will be able to. And basically bringing people together to agree on which of the main problems we want to tackle and what are the solutions that should be implemented. And we've also found that community dialogues have been a really great forum to find people with like personal stories, personal testimonies, who want to speak out, who want to give us their story, which have then led to like super powerful advocacy tools as well. So the third way is like sometimes we can't fix the problem at the clinic. Maybe it's a stock out that's happening across the province. Sometimes it's things like an implementing partner is, having bad attitude at patients and disclosing their statuses. And we want to escalate that up to the people who have the power to like hold them to account and fix those problems. So we ask the, sorry for the acronym, I pulled this from an existing internal presentation. So the DO is a district organizer, and they're the people who manage these CMs, which is a community monitor. And so they should really speak to the national project team, because we've got different methods of directly communicating with national and provincial departments of health, and direct lines to CDC and USAID technical leads to try and like fix those problems really quickly. Next slide. So yeah, this also moves into this part, like what if you need a rapid resolution to something? Because it's all good and well going to the clinic, but perhaps like there's an urgent issue that can't wait for a quarterly report to come out. It needs to be fixed then and there. So a really good example of this is like, what happens if you get to the facility and there's a stock out of first line ARVs and people are not getting the medicines they need? Like, we can't wait to address that. We have to address that then and there. Or at times we get there and someone is not being treated for what they need to be treated for, like an emergency. Or maybe the clinic could be unsafe for people to be in at that time and it needs fixing then and there. So they're just some examples of like things that we need to do to fix the issue then and there. Next slide. So we kind of set up a kind of protocol for what you should do in this case. So in this case of having needing a rapid solution, you should think, can the facility manager fix this? So is it that one staff member is right now shouting at people and we need to then go to the facility manager to be like, hey, this is not like on, we need to fix this right then and there. if it's something like something bigger that they wouldn't have the power to immediately be able to fix, then we need to consider what can be done. We might need to contact the district health team or the provincial health team or the national health team to try and fix the problem. Or we might need to contact CDC or USAID to fix the problem. So we ask the comrades then to escalate that up in our WhatsApp channel so that we can quickly make a plan of how to address the problem. If the facility manager can address the problem, then we ask ourselves, is the facility manager or any other managers aware of this situation first? So if no, let's go and bring it to their attention and give them an opportunity to fix this challenge. If yes, is it that they're aware but they've not resolved it because they can't or they don't want to resolve the problem? In either way, we might need to escalate it up to try and get a resolution to the challenge then and there. And a really good example of how rapid resolution can work well, which is Anele's favorite example to give of everything, is when we were working at a clinic called Reader's Park Clinic, and we arrived there and we spoke to six people who were not getting their medicines. They were not getting second line ARVs. And on the day that we were there, when it was raised with the facility team, they said they didn't have transport to go and get medicines that needed to be brought into the clinic, even though this has been a problem that had been apparently ongoing for 6 months. And then we immediately raised that with the PEPFAR teams nationally in the country, and the issue was resolved the next day when medicines were brought into that clinic. So there is like possibility to have like a really rapid resolution where potentially like sorry, I was muted. There could possibly be just that the teams higher up don't know about it and they have the ability to fix it. So it's really important to try and establish kind of systems of rapid response. So if you go to the next slide. So this is a little bit of an example of how we tried to get the comrades to communicate up like challenges on the day that might need an immediate action from outside the immediate clinic. So we would, in order to like streamline the process, we want to try and get them to capture all the information in the message, so we can be forwarding rather than like having to add things into the messages when we're all busy on things as well. So we try and ask them to like get in the date, get in the clinic, get in the district, get in the province, and then say the challenge that had been found. So these are challenges that we got the other day. So we found that staff from VITS were shouting at the chronic patients and publicly announcing people's HIV status in the clinic. So people left without collecting their medicines. So I was able to forward that directly to our WhatsApp group with the technical national PEPFAR leads, CDC and USAID leads, and then they were able to like follow up and resolve that situation. Or the bottom one where Right to Care staff were telling patients, these are implementing partners, by the way, they were telling patients in the waiting area that if they didn't want to test for HIV, then they couldn't get treatment or other medical attention. So again, we escalated that to the relevant teams who could pick that up themselves. And that's the kind of mechanism of like rapid response that we've set up to try and like not sit on things and just try and fix things as quick as possible rather than, you know, like waiting for a quarterly meeting to address some of these problems. And then I think we're on to Anele to take the rest for it.
Thanks, Lottie, Brian, and everybody. Greetings, colleagues. My name is Anele Yawa. I am the General Secretary of Treatment Action Campaign and also a leader of the PHIV sector, which is constituted by five organizations, including TAC. And I am also the Chief Accounting Officer of the Retreat, the project. So on top of what Uloti has presented. Now we are engaging with duty bearers. So the duty bearers, we're talking about people who are holding positions of power. It can be the facility manager, the district health manager, the HOD of the province, the head of the Department of Health in the province, or the ME, the MEC of Health, who is a political head in the health department at the provincial level, or the Minister of Health, who is the political head or a political principal of the whole Ministry of Health in the country, or the Director General in the Department of Health, who is the Chief Accounting Officer within the Department of Health. Can you move to the next slide, Comrade Ryan? So let's start engagements at the clinic level, where we're engaging with officials at the clinic level. Next slide. So after everything that Uloti has reported to us, meaning that the community monitors who are working in that particular facility, the district organizer, who is a supporter of the CM, including the members of the organizations of the PHIV sector in that community, have analyzed the data, and they have identified as to say what are the gaps, and now what is needed now is to say how are we addressing the problems that were picked up on the state of the clinic report, so that by the time the retreat the team sends the feedback to the clinic, we know that on the ground the community members are aware of the issues that we have collected. So this document, which we call the state of the clinic report, is a written report which gives reflections on everything that we have picked up, and we use it as an official document to engage with duty bearers, even if it is on the other level, because it is always important that all our reports are written down, all the facts are gathered on the report, so that when we engage with the duty bearers at the clinic level, we are able to produce or present tangible facts to them. Next slide. So this is how the report looks like. I'm sure the colleagues can see it, and it's easy. If maybe you are working with the district organizer and the community monitor to understand this, because they will be able to explain to all the members of these organizations as to say, on this section, this is what we're talking about, and this is the information that we have gathered. Next slide, please. So now, the issues that we have picked up at the facility level, some of them do not fall within the powers of the facility manager. Let's say, for argument's sake, one of the things that we have picked up in the facility are long waiting queues, and people are spending a lot of time in the facility because there is a shortage of nurses and other health providers, meaning that the facility manager does not have powers to hire. These decisions can be taken at the district level, and then we would have engaged with the facility manager, and then the facility manager will be able to show us the organogram of the facility, where are the gaps within the organogram, so that maybe when we go and engage, we will escalate this problem now to the level of the district manager, where the political leadership and also, meaning that we will maybe bring the community monitor, the district organizer, maybe two leaders from the PHIV sector at that particular district or at that particular community, because it is always good for community struggles to be led by the communities who experience these daily problems. So they will meet with the district manager, meaning that when they meet with the district manager, they have also collected other problems in other facilities within this district. So by the time they meet the district manager, they don't present a problem of one facility, but they present problems of many facilities, meaning that these problems will be different. Some of them might be addressed by the district manager, or some of them cannot be addressed by the manager, and then we escalate these problems to the level of the provincial leadership. Either we reach out to the provincial head of the department or the MEC of health, meaning that now when we meet with the provincial head of the department or the MEC of health,
which is we are not bringing in the problem of one district. We are bringing in problems of many districts in that particular province. Then it means when we go there, we've got the reports of many districts that we have consolidated into one provincial report. Then we will be able to say on this district, this problem and this problem was picked up and it is still a problem and it needs to be addressed. Let's take a typical example. In South Africa, we've got a population of plus minus 58 million. Out of that 58 million, 42 million people are public healthcare users. And then when you go to our communities, you find out that the catchment area of this particular facility is more than the required standard. Let's say, according to the normal standards of the World Health Organization, each facility must accommodate a community of about 10 to, let's say, 13,000. And what you find out on the ground is that this community is about 60,000. And as the result of that, in these facilities, always they are overcrowded and the clinics are small. Then it means we need to discuss with the provincial leadership about issues of infrastructure and how do we address issues of creating more space in our facilities. Then we engage. But also in that problem, in that process, there will be issues that the provincial Department of Health will not be in a position to address. Then we take those issues now to the Director General of Health or the Minister of Health. But also in some areas, you find out that some of these issues have nothing to do per se directly with the Department of Health, but they have something to do with the implementing partners. Then all those issues, we pick them up and we present them to PEPFAR. Let me just give you a quick example. Okay, move to the next slide. I'm gonna give this example as we move along. So I think most of the things that I've just said is what on this slide, which talks about the state of the district report, I have covered all these issues that are raised here when I was talking. And also now in that process, as Richidze, we will be able now to have these reports. And also in that process, it becomes now also our responsibility to check as to say whether the reports that we are producing are factual and accurate. Because when you give reports that are not verified, it means that you are putting yourself in a disadvantaged position to be attacked by the duty bearers and the officials. That's why it is important that we need to know our story. We need to read these reports as the collective of the leadership, so that when we meet with the duty bearers, we know our story. This slide shows the examples of reports starting from the People's COP 20, People's COP 19, and one of the reports ETAC released in 2018 on state of health in the provinces. Next slide. Next slide, Brian. So now, when we engage with these duty bearers, we're putting facts on the table. And in that process, we are advocating for change. Let me give you a typical example of what happened last Friday. So in 2014, here in South Africa, in Free State, about 3,000 community care workers were dismissed, and about 120 of them were arrested. But at the end of the day, only 94 community health care workers who were found guilty by the court of law, because others had entered into agreement with the justice system. So the 94 community health care workers were supported by TAC and Section 27 from the first to the last moment of their case, until they went to the High Court to appeal the judgment, and the judgment came back to say they are not guilty. And then they were reinstated back to work. But some of them, the criminal records were not cleared under their names. So last week, most of them received letters that were terminating their contracts. So this came to our attention. All what we did from our side, after we got the information, simply because we are working in partnership with the DOH. I picked up the phone, I called the HOD of health, and I told him of what is happening, and I gave him the facts in terms of the court ruling. And the following week, meaning that this week, Monday, all the 94 community health care workers were reinstated back to work. So that also shows the power of advocacy, is to say advocacy does not mean only to picket outside or to do it, but it means to engage duty bearers, put facts on the table, and also advise duty bearers where they have gone wrong and what needs to be done. Next slide, please. So now we're talking as activists. So as activists, when we gather, as I've said, when we gather the evidence on the ground, it is important that we analyze. And also as activists together, we are able to generate solutions politely so that we can be able to engage a duty bearers. But also in some instances, you find out that as much as you are engaging with duty bearers, but we don't see any change. And then the question we need to ask ourselves, what is the next step? Then it means now it is time for us to build some strategies and tactics on how best can we build a campaign around this in order for these challenges to be able to be addressed. Next slide, Brian. So now we are saying now we have tried our level best as the leadership, meaning that maybe those few people who were engaging with the duty bearers and nothing is changing, meaning that we need to go back to the community, to our structures, give them a feedback as to say, we have tried our level best. So now is the time for the community to take back their power. Then it means we are coming up with strategies on how best can we implement a campaign in terms of addressing this. Next slide. So now we are going to develop a strategy to address that particular problem that is not addressed on the ground. So there are a couple of questions that we need to ask ourselves. The first question we need to ask ourselves, who is our primary target within the people that I have mentioned, from the facility manager up until to the Minister of Health? And we ask if maybe this campaign we are designing seeks to address a problem at the clinic level. Let's say at the clinic level, there is a health provider who keeps on disclosing HIV status of people and keeps on shouting. And maybe we had a meeting with the facility manager to say the reason people are not feeling comfortable to come to your facility is because Sister so-and-so is shouting at people, and the facility manager agreed with us, and the facility manager said to us she is going or he is going to address the matter, and maybe we agree that we want you to address the matter in the next 7 days. And then after the next 7 days, the problem still continues. It means we go back to the facility manager to find out why is this matter continuing. And then in that process, we must go out now and find community members who were directly insulted by that nurse, so that they can be able to provide personal testimonies about the experiences they have experienced. Then through that process, now we are able to build a campaign as to say, what we need to do now, the facility manager does not want to listen to us. Let's go to the people, get stories of the people. Let's take people, maybe we are planning to have a picket outside the facility, and maybe we'll reach out to the media and other people. But it is important for these people to know who is the target and why are we picketing, so that even if the media comes and ask why are you picketing, so that people knows as to say what is the problem. And also in that process, we will be able to pick as to say the primary target is the facility manager, and the secondary target will be the district manager. As to say, district manager, if the facility manager is not responding to this, we are escalating this matter to the district level. Next slide. So this is what is on this slide is what I have just explained, as to say how are we picking up the problems. So we will start on the ground at the level of the facility manager, clinic committee, meaning that in South Africa, we have health governance structures, meaning that these structures are elected by communities to be the governance structure of the particular facility. The purpose of having these clinic committees, they are a bridge between the facility and the community. Whenever community members are experiencing problems, they need to report these problems to clinic committees. So in some instances, clinic committees do not function. So in our engagements as community monitors and peer HIV sector, that's where we also focus, and that's where we start moving to all other levels, from the facility to the district level, from the district level to the provincial level, as well as to the level of the mayors, because in South Africa, we've got 8 councils, which are led at the national level by the deputy president, and in provinces, they are led by the mayors, and in municipalities, they are led by the mayors. So we escalate the problem to those levels, and up until to the national level, where we engage with the Minister of Health, Director General in the Department of Health, PEPFAR, CDC, and everybody. Next level, slide. So in this process, we are working in communities, and in communities we are not working alone, because through these community engagements that Uloti was talking about, we're reaching to individuals as well as to organizations. And in some instances, you find out that some of the challenges that we are picking up on the ground are common to what other organizations are picking up, and then in that process we are able to build partnership and allies. And then also in this process, we will be able to know as to say who are opposed to our standpoint. Like in South Africa, you find out that social movements that speak truth to power and who don't get funding from the government, they are always objective. And then on the other hand, you find out that there are other organizations that are funded by the government who are in the pockets of the government. Like I'm going to talk about the situation of South Africa. In South Africa, we've got a SANAC civil society, which is useless and a waste of time. And that structure is recognized by the government. That's why always, so SANAC is South African National AIDS Council. So that's why at some point you find out that in this process, as much as we have a civil society movement, but not all of them are speaking the same language that we are speaking, because some of them are captured. So in that process, we need to know who is our opponent and where are our differences. Then in that process, we will be able to anticipate a lashback from them or whatever attack that we might get from them. And we need to be able to respond in those lashbacks and attacks when they come from them trying to defend the state. Because in South Africa, for instance, everybody is welcoming the NHI, but it does not mean that we are not going to question issues within the draft bill. And then you find out that there are other civil society organizations who think that when we critique the bill, we are under the state. So that is one of the situations that we need also when we're doing monitoring and engaging with communities and allies. We need to pick up as to say, this partner, we agree on this and that, and we disagree on this and that. Next slide. So now we're talking about tactics that we need to use. So the first question that we need to ask ourselves, what are you actually going to do to achieve your object? So it means, if we want to say in this particular facility there is this problem, or in this particular district there is this problem, we need to come up with a strategy that is going to help us in terms of achieving our objective and also addressing the problem that we have picked up in terms of engaging with duty bearers and also other people who are holding positions of power, in order for us to be able to fix whatever problem that has been experienced by the community on the ground. Next slide. Next slide, right? So from this slide and the last slide, I am going to give to Uloti just to wrap up.
Thanks, A1. So this is basically just showing like what types of tactics that we encourage people to use. And like, people love to start with a picket. So we try and like encourage people to have done a certain amount of things before you get to like pickets and vigils and things. So rather like within the duty bearer engagement, the green thing should have already happened. And then you would step it up with maybe doing different stories, using the media, maybe building a coalition and getting them signed on to things. And if that doesn't work, then you'd step it up to like picketing or sit-ins at the clinic or days of action and things. So it's just trying to show that whilst you have a level of escalation up to different decision makers, you've also got a level of escalation across at the clinic with like more spikier tactics as you go forward. Next slide. Yes, and the more creative the better in terms of the tactics, because there's so many tactics and people get bored looking at the same things, but you can really engage the media when you get more creative in what you do. And then you need to just develop an action plan. So you've worked out all the different parts of your campaign strategy, and now you just need to put them to a timeline. Like when could you have the maximum impact on that tactic? What's the best way to use them? Who's going to do what? And then they should like submit that to the national project team so that we can support in terms of resources and like making the campaigns have like the maximum impact on the ground. And I think that's it.
Just 1 minute, Brian, sorry. So the other part that I forgot to mention, colleagues, is to say these engagements means that we will make calls, we will write letters to the duty bearers, and we keep copies. Everything that we do, we write down, so that if our engagements do not yield any positive results, then when we take it to the streets, maybe we picket or we make sit-ins, we know that we've got all the evidence at hand as to say, on this date, here is a letter we wrote to you, you never replied to us. On this date, here are the minutes, we had a meeting with you, we agreed on this and that. So that's why it is important, every step that we take and everything we do, we need to write it down. Thanks.
Thanks, Anele and Lati. So I know we have another presentation here from Kenneth from Hepsin, Uganda. I think we're gonna go through that quick and then take questions all as a group. I think just in the interest of time, that may be the best way to approach. So I'm gonna turn it over to Ken.
Hi, Brian, and hi, everyone. I'm Kenneth Mwehonge from Heps, Uganda. I also co-coordinate civil society engagements with PEPFAR in Uganda. We are three organizations that coordinate the civil society engagements. That's HEPS, International Community of Women Living with HIV and Sexual Minorities Uganda, that coordinate these engagements. Much of what I'm going to speak to, Anle and Lotti have already given us a firm foundation. They've set the scene for it, so we shouldn't take so much time on my slides. Next slide, please. So in Uganda, we work in a coalition. We are a network of over 60 local civil society organizations that comprise of networks of people living with HIV, key population networks, networks of young people, networks of women living with HIV, and also now networks of people living with disabilities that are living with HIV. We are the forces behind the engagements with PEPFAR, and just to mention, I forgot to mention that my presentation is focused more on how we use this data to influence change within the PEPFAR program. So in doing this, we work as a coalition of the networks I've highlighted. We are coordinated by the three organizations that I've mentioned, HEPS, ICW, and SMAG. We meet regularly. We now have actually weekly check-in updates with the core team, and also within a fortnight we gather again with the wider team. That's more to what Lotti and presented around the community-led monitoring. We've also intensified our engagements. But before that, we used to meet every month, and that's how we operate. 2 years back, we also, just like South Africa, we learned from South Africa and started documenting what we call the People's Voice. This is a document that contains program gaps from PEPFAR's largest programs, gaps and recommendations, or the solutions Lottie was talking about, to PEPFAR programming. And this we particularly use for PEPFAR's annual regional planning meetings for the development of the country operational plan. So this is the document that we use to ensure that we influence the language in the country operational plan and get commitments that we come and hold our countries accountable at country level. But before the People's COP, we used to do national and community consultations, though they were not documented well, and they were not so systematic, but we've over the years gone ahead to improve them. Next slide, please. So from the international level or regional level, where we influence the country operational plan, at country level, we hold quarterly meetings with PEPFAR. These are program oversight and accountability response team meetings. For those familiar with the PEPFAR language, this is what they call the port meetings, but they are basically accountability meetings. And what happens here is that we give feedback on PEPFAR performance. These are voices we gather from community, but also analysis of data that we receive from PEPFAR, where we give feedback and also follow up on the commitments in the People's COP. And in Uganda, we have actually two sets of meetings of these. We have what we call the intimate meetings, and these are meetings with our strategic information team, where a small team of civil society members and the PEPFAR tech and core team meet and go through the data. Just the very first time they're seeing it, and we're also seeing it with them. And they're very, very intimate. We shout at each other and yell at each other. And then we come to the more formal program oversight and accountability response team meetings, where we these bring together different stakeholders. We have one tomorrow. That's a snapshot of what's cooking and what we'll be presenting tomorrow. And actually, we'll have our head of mission on that call. So we give that feedback to them and their technical teams. Next slide. Speak more on tactics that we use to have commitments or influence change. Using the data that we find. We use, and this we've used a lot over the COVID period. These have been petitions and civil society statements and open letters to key political or decision makers. What you see here, two letters. One was to the National COVID Task Force chair that we wrote on the 19th of May with particular demands, but these come from the data we've been using and what we see on ground, how COVID was affecting programs, which heavily and negatively affected the delivery of services. And then there was a letter to the head of our Uganda AIDS Commission, as well demanding for improvement on access to care for people living with HIV during COVID. And sorry about the noise. But we've adopted this approach. It has helped us a lot. There's one we wrote to the president right after lockdown, where health workers and people who needed care, especially people who were due for refills, were not allowed to move. where we wrote a letter to the president, and over time we saw him lifting some of the recommendations he had put in place, or the limitations of movement of people living with HIV he had put in place over time. So that has been a powerful tactic that we've adopted this during COVID due to lockdown. Next slide, please. And then the other major tactics we use, my colleagues have talked about meetings. Before the meetings, we do a lot of media engagements. In Uganda, media is one of the very effective tools that we use to influence change. So we usually use media. I think Lottie spoke of being innovative in using these tactics, where we know issues are a bit political, and people that are hard to reach or hard to get, maybe the president sometimes, where we want them to comment or generate debate. So we do like press statements or write open letters in media to them, or do investigative stories that unearth some things that are a bit political, and the technical arm has no much influence or decision they can make. So there we use a lot of media. And we also do a lot of one-on-one. So for our people's voice now, there is an approach we piloted last year, where we have pre-regional planning meetings, engagements with the high-level decision makers. That's the US head of mission, the Ambassador Malak, the photo down, the lady in black in the middle, putting on black in the middle, our former Ambassador Malak. We had established this mechanism where we debrief her before we travel to Johannesburg, but with clear demands. We ask her to either ask OGAC, those that are too big, like that require her support, to OGAC, would demand, ask her to engage with OGAC, but also ask her the very, very high level decisions that maybe require the president, because here in Uganda, the US mission has a highway to the president's office. And she did that actually over time, whenever we asked her, and she effected a lot of change, especially with our supply chain systems, which had lots of loopholes, lots of corruption, but she did that. And that was through those demands. And also things that are required, bilateral agreements, more commitment from our governments, like the issue of health workers, where we needed government to commit that they will take over these PEPFAR-supported health workers, those that she led. Then we also have one-on-ones with our minister. This is usually for people's scope or high-level decisions that require policy change. She also did a lot of policy change. I remember the change to DTG. I think Uganda was one of the countries that changed rapidly, but this is through pressure that we, and evidence that we presented to her, the rollout of PrEP. So those engagements where we need those decisions, we engage them one-on-ones, and at least we have now formal working relationships with them. Then we also have taken co-working groups, the TWGs, a representation. These are within our ministries of the different line ministries of government, where we represent and present these issues on a quarterly basis, and also their task force representations. And in particular here, there is one formed for index testing to oversee and correct the mess that index testing brought about. And we have representation there. And there are several that have been created as corrective measures to our demands, and where we have representation and they meet more regularly. And we use this information that we get, that Lottie and Enali are presented from the communities. That's what we take to these tables. Next slide, please. Yeah, I think that was my last slide, and thank you.
Thanks, Ken. So we're gonna open this up to questions. And so everybody knows how to do this, raise your hand or just unmute yourselves and start asking questions. Anele, Lati, Kenneth are all here. Maybe while we wait, I think we've got David. Go ahead, David.
Afternoon from Mlilongwe, everybody. So you can hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay. So my questions are two. I think the other one for both South Africa and Uganda on the media. But the first one is to South Africa. For things that move you to a campaign stage where things have not worked at the level of engaging with the duty bearers in what I call a kind way, what have been the reasons for that? What has made things not work at that stage? And then secondly, like I said, for both countries, there's mention, at least Uganda have mentioned effectiveness of the media. But I also wanted to hear from South Africa, how effective has it been when you use the media? Can you give us examples, for example, I think for both countries? Yeah.
Anele, should I come in first? So just on the question of like why do we need to get to like campaigns? It depends on what facility. In some facilities, they are like welcoming to community monitors and they want to like resolve the problem. But in some places, they completely ignore the problems that you're raising, or if the problem points to them failing at something, then they might not want to address that challenge. Potentially it's their own attitude or their staff's attitude that is particularly poor and is making patients not want to access services or something, and then they're completely resistant to wanting to change it. So you can meet with them as much as you want, but they're not actually going to address the challenge. And so for things like that, often we've needed to like escalate it to people who can actually hold them to account. And sometimes, like, I mean, these clinics, some of them have been failing for years. And despite like repeatedly drawing attention to the crises in the clinics, like nothing is like resolved in them. So in those instances, we've used campaign actions, we've used sit-ins, we've used days of action to highlight the real problems on the ground, because sometimes you get into like these big fancy meetings at the top and they kind of saying, even PEPFAR is always saying like, oh no, this is wonderful and this is great. And then you're like, well, actually on the ground, we've been trying to fix this for years and you've not fixed it. So in those kind of instances, we've escalated it up. I'm sure Nelly can say more on that. I'm also trying to think of some media examples for you. Maybe the other two can come in and I'll try and think of a good media example whilst they're talking.
Lodi, thanks. Can you please assist me? What was the question?
When would we need to escalate? Like, why would we need to escalate into a campaign? Why wouldn't things just be fixed through the kind of duty engaging duty bearers exercise? And some examples of when media has worked well for us.
So let me give you a typical example, colleagues. In January, I think it was the 6th of January, in Free State, we got media reports about ARVs that were stolen in Bloemfontein, in one of the facilities, in the same, and people were arrested with about 196. And also in the same week, maybe after 3 days, other people were arrested also with about 46 bottles of ARVs in the same province. And after a week, other people again were arrested stealing ARVs in Free State.
with about 1,000 bottles of ARVs. And in all these instances, there are officials from the Department of Health. So one of the things that we did was to engage with the HOD of Health to ask how best can we help. And we also asked the HOD of Health as to say, what role is the department going to do about its staff members who are behind bars and implicated on these cases. We advised the HOD to put those people on suspension. We even went further to the SAPS as the collective of the Pill HIV sector. That's where we got the names of the investigating officers, and we went to the investigating officers. On the day these people were appearing in court, we filled up the streets of Bloemfontein. I think we brought about 1,000 people going to court, going to call for the justice system not to give these people bail because they are equal to murderers. Because when we counted the number of bottles that they have stolen, as per the number of people who were supposed to receive medicines, it means those people who didn't receive medicines were forced by these people to default on treatment. So our picket not always is against the system, but at some point it puts pressure to the government in order for the duty bearers to be able to act fast and swiftly. But also there are instances, colleagues, whereby you find out that the number of meetings that we are engaging on with duty bearers do not yield any positive results. One must remember that in South Africa, we had a state president by the name of Thabo Mbeki who refused, and the Minister of Health by the name of late Mando Chabalang Simang, who refused to give people ARVs because of their politics. TAC and other progressive forces had to fight against the system, had to oppose the government. So not always our government, the politicians and the officials are always on the side of the people. It is against that reason we need to show the muscle of what power lies with the people. So it is against that reason where at times we feel that we knock on the doors, nobody wants to listen to us, and we are left with no other option because we have followed all the due processes of trying to be smart, and then now we need to vent out our anger. Then when we say we vent out our anger, it does not mean we're going to facilities to destroy or demolish, because we use the constitution as our only weapon. We go there to put pressure and make sure that we escalate this matter to the level of the Minister of Health. Because in some instances, you find out that you don't get a positive response at facility level. Then when you make a sit-in, I will make you an example. In November 2018, in one of the hospitals in Gauteng by the name of Tele Mogwerane, where many people were dying there, and one patient died inside the hospital. Nobody knew about the whereabouts of this patient, yet the patient fell behind the bed, and it was only discovered after 3 days that the patient died. Then the only thing we did was to call for a meeting with the CEO of the hospital. She was arrogant. Then we mobilized members of TAC. We went there in numbers. I was leading that campaign. We met with the police. We told the police we are not here to fight, but we are here to demand our constitutional rights. We made a sit-in. I called the MEC of Health of Gauteng to tell the MEC of Health that now we are here at Tele Mogwerane. This is the problem. I called the Minister of Health. He was in the cabinet meeting. I said, Minister of Health, we are in this hospital because of this problem and this problem and this problem. Guess what? The people who responded quickly was the MEC and the minister, because we said to the minister and the MEC, if you think that what you are doing is against the constitution and we are breaking the law, call the police to arrest us. But if the CEO and the people who are managing this hospital are the ones who are violating the rights of the people, then they must be arrested. So at times we take these actions in order to address the problems at hand, but without making any damage or fighting with anyone. Thanks.
Thank you. I think Enle and Lotti have, David have responded to you, but just to add how effective media, like in Uganda, it's very, very, very effective. And one thing we've learned for many things that are controversial, whenever we take them through media, then we get attention right away and commitments to action. other than the boardroom setting way of advocacy usually doesn't, it yields much when we're influencing like a policy, but where we need like financial commitment, it's media that has helped us. For example, recently, we had an addition of $50 million for ARVs from our government, but it's because we kept exposing government because their contribution to ARVs for over the years, we did like a media story where their commitments for the last 3 years towards ARV funding were not coming through, and that was causing stockouts. And eventually, together with the US government and civil society, that media generated a lot of pressure to our Minister of Finance. And last year, they added that additional $50 million, the biggest ever contribution by our government. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, everyone. We're over time, but Nelson, let's go to your question.
Thanks, Brian. Sorry, just to, I have two questions, just brief to Lottie and the Kenneth. Based on the monitoring cycle that she presented, I would like to understand on how we can distinguish these CLM stages and the monitoring cycle when you come on implementation. For instance, on the stage or CLM stage analysis and the translation, on the monitoring cycle, that the on the analysis and the data, all these are the same or not? Question to Kenneth, he has just mentioned also about the media engagement on translate the data into advocacy. I'd like to understand more. What if they have engaged with maybe they have the message that they presented, it is aggressive to the policy makers, or can he share with us the vivid example on your experience on that? Thank you.
Nelson, just before you mute, on your first question, I don't think I quite understood exactly what it was you were asking.
Well, all right. It was about the distinguishing between the CLM stages and this monitoring cycle that Lott presented on the issue of analysis of the data.
So do you mean the CLM stages in terms of going and doing this, the data collection, analyzing the data, and then moving into this piece of now engaging, you know, the facility managers, doing immediate follow-up, et cetera?
Yes.
Okay.
So I think on that, we've tried to break it down into steps to make it as easy as possible for comrades who are like joining the project, so that each step has a thing that you do in it to try and like that happen. So the gather evidence stage, it's clear you implement by going to the facility and you fill out the surveys. The data analysis section, you know that you have to fill out a reflection form, which is the first bit, and then you have to go onto the data dashboard to download your analysis of what happened in your facility. So when you get to the solution stage, you know you have to have a meeting with the comrades that you work with to discuss what are the potential solutions that could happen, and also discuss if maybe you need to outsource to try and come up with other solutions. And then when you get to engage duty bearers, you know there's one piece of document that you have to do before you go any further. You have to produce a state of the clinic report, and you have to share that with everyone in the local branches working in that facility, and as well as the provincial sector leaders. And then you can go and have your meeting. You can't possibly go to the meeting without your state of the clinic report. Then you have to do your notes from the meeting, which say what the actions are. And then you know what you're monitoring against. So we've tried to break it down into steps, so implementation is easy because there's like a clear thing under each of the cycle elements that you know you have to achieve to get to progress to the next one, basically. And you know you have 3 months to do the entire cycle of going around and doing each of those aspects. I hope that answered it.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks Nelson for the question. Of course, the media stories we run sometimes are aggressive, and we get calls from these decision makers. But over time, we've learned how to mitigate that. Usually what we use these days a lot is what we call media investigative stories. So we've established a good working relationship with journalists. So in Uganda, we have the Health Journalists Network. These are journalists that are interested in health reporting from all media houses. At least they'll have a focal person for media, whom if it's a controversial issue and feel that it will put anyone at risk, we provide them with all the information. Then they go, they run the stories on their own. And then after we run that story, then usually after they come back to us for comments, after it's out in the public, the responsible decision makers are commenting on it, then they usually then come back to us, and then we can come out and publicly talk about it, since it's already out there, and then give more clarifications. But that's how we put out controversial and things that we feel can put us at risk. We just give it to the media, then no one is quoted, then they go and put it out, and then after they can come back to us once it's safe to speak.
Thanks, Guinness.
Okay, we're going to do one more question. Atu?
Hello, everybody. Thank you, Brian, Anel, Kenneth, and Lottie for the great experience sharing. I work for Sikika in Tanzania, and we used to use media as one of our advocacy approach. But I wanted to share with you one of the experiences and wanted to ask if you have also experienced the same challenges that we experienced. I remember in 2017, Sikika is doing monitoring of availability of health commodities, essential health commodities. And we conducted a monitoring and found that there was a critical shortage of essential health commodities. And the shortage reached 53%. And we also cross-checked with the medical store department, MACD, and on their website, and we found the same information. We called the media and shared the information, and it was all over the media, the TVs, the newspapers, and the government was unhappy with the information, and the MACD, the medical department, immediately closed off the website where we used to access information, and we were really, the government was on us, because for them they were claiming that they had availability of 43%, and they were not talking about the shortage. So it has affected us, and now there is a media law that really requires statistics, the permit, and what. So, but the website from the MSCD has been shut completely. So I was wondering, from your experience, what do you think we went wrong? What did we do wrong? We as Sikika and sharing those information. And have you ever experienced same experience that we have experienced? And what should we do next if we were to use the media or do the same thing when we experience the same thing that we think it's important to be addressed? What approach do you think we should be doing?
Thank you for that experience. Indeed, it's a very, very powerful one. And we've experienced so many of those, so many. But over time, we've learned a safe way to do it. And one of the ways you can do it, we've also had some media houses shut down over releasing some classified information, especially involving corruption. Even the stockouts as well. One of my colleagues that whom you very well know, former colleagues, Margaret, I think our National Medical Store has issued an intent to sue her over a story we ran on stockouts a few years back. But the safest way to do it is if you get an affected person, if the media is interviewing an affected person, someone who has gone to the clinic and gone without medicine. So you let that generate bed because that's evidence enough. I've gone, there's evidence, there's documentation, they have their cards or books indicating that they didn't receive a medicine. That's enough. Then you work retrospectively, what's the cause. They go interviewing different people. And eventually, they're exposed, but in a way that protects you and the organization and the people involved. That's one of the approaches you can use. I can share with you more privately because of time, but we have so many of those, and I can give you tricks on how to circumvent these stringent guidelines that they give to the media houses. Thank you.
Thank you, Kenneth.
I'm not sure I have an addition to the answer. I think we have like a different kind of environment in South Africa where we can say and do a lot before getting shut down. And media has been like a super impactful tool for us. And media is really interested in what we do. So we can do some types of actions and get hundreds of radio and TV and mentions on the media and things. So I think it's a quite a different kind of contextual environment to be in. So I defer entirely to Kenneth's answers on this. I'm not sure if Anele has any input.
Just to add on what Ulote is saying, and also in some instances, colleagues, some of the information where we don't have a footprint as these organizations, some of the information we get it from the media. Like as I'm talking to you now, I just got an invite from the media about 197 healthcare workers who have tested positive in one facility and they are not yet released and the facility is not closed. So the media is asking us for an interview as to say what is our comment. So it means we got that from the media. Now we're gonna attend the interview, but after that we're gonna make follow-ups as to say what is happening. And then sometimes that's how we normally do things at sometimes. So yeah, thanks.
Thanks everyone. I certainly don't have anything additional to add on this last question. I think it is really hard and defer to the experiences that Kenneth has had. So I think this has been really useful, and thank you to Anele and Lottie and Kenneth for sharing all of the experiences. I think we've got the assignment on the website for everybody to do that's really about building the, trying to look at following these issues and building a campaign when looking at some state of the facility reports. So I think that's the next place to go. We will have office hours tomorrow if people want to talk more about this. I can reach out to Anele and Lottie and Kenneth to be part of those office hours as well, or send questions their way if there's things that we can't answer during office hours tomorrow. But thank you everybody for joining.
Thank you, Brian, and everybody.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Keep in touch, Kenneth.
Thank you. Okay. Happy to support.
transmitted.